And welcome to Stop the Presses, the 2nd of October 2019, coming to you live, your host Mark Anderson. As I indicated 2 days ago on my show, today's a pretty special day, a pretty special show. My guest today is Brian David Anderson. He's an S-E-N Anderson. I'm an S-O-N. No relation in terms of normal relations and family and things like that, ancestry, but a lot of relation in terms of what research we've done over the last 10 or 12 years in particular regarding the incident on Elm Street in Dallas, Texas on November 22nd, 1963. We all know what we're talking about. We're talking about what's called the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You hear the word JFK and the word assassination comes right out of your mouth. Milk, it does a body good. Beef, it's what's for dinner. 7-Up, the Uncola. JFK, assassination. As if an advertising agency has planted it in our collective brain. But what we're going to talk about today stems from a very recent event, and that is the passing away on September 10th of one Dr. Robert McClelland, and he became the last Trauma Room 1 doctor that was in Trauma Room 1 at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas on that fateful day. He's the last of the doctors that was there to pass away. There's one other doctor who was around there, Dr. Kenneth Salyer of Dallas. Last I knew, he lived in Dallas. He's a facial reconstruction surgeon. He's still around. He was definitely the youngest, but second in line in terms of being the youngest was Dr. Robert McClelland. And he, again, is the last of the doctors that was inside Trauma Room 1 to pass away. Dr. Malcolm Perry died about 10 years ago in 2009. And I'm not sure about the fate of all of them. But we're using that as a springboard today. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Oh, good to be here.
Yes, the last time you were on this show, if I'm recalling right, there might have been one in between, but the pivotal time was 2008, 11 years ago, and I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I had just started doing Republic Broadcasting Radio. And at that time, my show, I believe, was called When Worlds Collide. It might have had an earlier name before that, but that was one of my earlier names. And my first stint at RBN was from 2008 to 2012, and yours was among the first shows. I had been in a conference the year before, 2007, in North Dallas, and somebody handed me a book called My God, I'm Hit, still in its shrink wrap. And it talked about a completely different look at what happened on Elm Street on that day in 1963. So let's take it from there. I'll let you go here, Brian, and let's talk about Dr. McClelland's passing and what was significant about Dr. McClelland's role in Trauma Room 1 and what we've learned from you and I having spoke to him in years past and what we can reflect on now that he's passed away.
Well, first off is that we are going to put up a link. Mark is going to be putting up a link to an article that I wrote, and it gives somewhat of a really in-depth background that I have with Dr. McClelland. And then now consequently, then also Mark then had also a background with the doctor. And basically what it started off for me is that how I got to know Dr. McClelland, it was through another doctor who was also in Trauma Room 1. His name was Charles Baxter. And when McClelland walked into the surgical room 1, Dr. Baxter was already there, and they were trying to perform a tracheotomy on the throat. They were using a bullet hole wound in the throat for their initial incision to put in an air tube so the body could breathe. They then asked Dr. McClelland to hold the forceps, and he had to walk around the body. And so then basically when he walked around, he had a direct viewpoint into the back of the head. And so then he had this, you know, closer than any other doctor to the back head wound. And then what was very important is that the blood of this victim then seeped on to, first off, his lab coat, and then went on to his shirt. He threw away the lab coat and kept his shirt. So over the years now, he will be going to JFK conferences, and he also, Dr. McClellan, got to a point where he felt it was a conspiracy, so then he went to JFK conferences, and he would hold up this shirt and show his bloody shirt. So then I came out with one book. That's what I did not know the background on that one, Mark, where somebody had handed you still on the shrink wrap. That was new. So after 11 years, I was wondering how you came across, my God, I'm hit. And so then now Dr. McClellan and I connected, and basically we went back and forth over things. This is all detailed in the article. And then we started presenting him some tremendous amount of information that he had not ever considered. And so we basically challenged him. What I'd like to do, Mark, now is you go ahead. Now, Mark got brought into this, and he did some really, really good work here, because then I was busy starting up another type of business, and he was able to do a lot of footwork. He went into the school book depository, and there was a picture of the JFK's jacket. It was Exhibit 393. And Mark and his wife Angie looked, and they said, there's something on with the right shoulder. So I went and ordered all the pictures, and we found all these anomalies. So his investigation helped there. He also then made contact with Dr. McClellan, that actually went into his home, and then also connected with another key person by the name of Al Reich. So basically, we're going to get back to Dr. McClellan here, some of the things of what we presented to him, and some really interesting things that happened. There was an obit in the New York Times. But Mark, I would kind of like to let you take over and kind of let them explain a little bit your odyssey now through our project called My God, I'm Hit.
Yes, it is an odyssey, and this is the big thing about today's show, ladies and gentlemen, those listening live and on the archive, is that this is really groundbreaking stuff. What we're talking about here, make no mistake, is about something completely different than what you've heard about the JFK assassination, quote, end quote. And that is, it requires a paradigm shift. You can either experience that shift, or you can fall into cognitive dissonance, fall prey to the usual programming and brainwashing, and forever get trapped between two equally false polarities, and that is conventional rifle shooting from the school book depository or conventional rifle shooting from the grassy knoll. And what we set out to show here, and what our evidence strongly supports, and this evidence comes from various angles involving mostly people that were there on Elm Street at the time of the so-called shooting, as well as what Brian described with Dr. McClellan looking directly at the rear head wound of the president. And Brian and I will talk about how that compared with some two sets of autopsy photos in a few minutes. But what I found, and what Brian is referring to, ladies and gentlemen, what I found was the best evidence did not lead to the conclusion that JFK died that day from rifle fire. It led to the conclusion that JFK lived to tell another day, lived on, in fact. And what we're saying here is a little difficult to believe at first, but when you look at the evidence from all the different vantage points, dispassionately and objectively, it's difficult to come to any other conclusion other than it was a fake assassination and actually abdication of the throne by JFK. You have to remember that people in those days were very, very easy to fool in many respects. They might have been a little bit less brainwashed in some respects than people subjected to social media and mainstream media today, but we also did not have a situation like today where everybody has a camera on their cell phones and iPhones. And so, and the news was reported by a painfully small number of networks. CBS, NBC, and ABC was just about it. So the information flow was very tightly controlled. And so any kind of reasonably slick presentation or operation, operation's a better word, could pretty easily fool most of the people most of the time. P.T. Barnum's philosophy comes into play here, and the work of Edward Bernays, the propaganda expert and the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And he cataloged in his book Propaganda the advertising and political propaganda techniques that could easily be wielded and weaponized against an unwitting population. And that's what happened on 11-22-63 in spades. At any rate, yes, I saw this picture of the jacket that JFK wore on that fateful day. And I noticed the usual hole in the jacket in the mid-back region, slightly mid-upper back region that we've all seen and been told about. But then I got to looking at the upper right shoulder, and it looked dark and kind of convoluted and stained in a way. But it wasn't quite clear enough at the time in that relatively small picture in the Texas School Book Depository, which became the Sixth Floor Museum. So I got a hold of Brian, the guest on today's show, and he ordered rather expensive, high-quality copies from the National Archives, where JFK's clothing is still kept to this day at the National Archives building in College Park, Maryland, not far from D.C. The National Archives, of course, has many facilities. That's one of them. And when we got the higher quality photos and Brian did the analyzing, what we found was that there was indeed another hole in the upper right shoulder, about 4 inches down from the top of the shoulder. And that was quite intriguing. And then, if you don't mind, Brian, I'll jump ahead to 2012 when I saw Robert Caro on TV the evening of a day I was covering Bilderberg in Virginia. I was very tired from covering Bilderberg, and I turned on the TV, got a cup of tea, sat down, and there's Robert Caro talking about a book he wrote pertaining to the JFK phenomenon. And he said that there was now a declassified collection of Secret Service agents' impressions from that day, the Secret Service agents who were involved in protecting the presidential motorcade on November 22, 1963, all their written reflections that were written at the time of the incident were collected in a book, and that that book and all these testimonies of the Secret Service agents was now declassified. I recall calling you breathlessly, I believe that very same evening, if not the following morning at the latest, and you got a hold of the LBJ Library, which happens to be in Austin, Texas. And all the presidential libraries, by the way, are part of the National Archives system, just a fact there. And you got a hold of the recently declassified book with all these testimonies. And what did I happen to find as I was perusing the book? That Glenn Bennett, a Secret Service agent in the Queen Mary, the card that contained LBJ and was right behind the presidential 100X motorcade, that limousine, that Glenn Bennett kept looking at the president when the sound of gunshots was heard. He didn't look around. He didn't look away. And as you said, Brian, he was a desk jockey. He was not a field agent by trade. And he didn't look around when the shots were heard. He kept looking at the president and saw the president get struck in the right shoulder, right where we saw it on the jacket.
Yeah, that's, if you go on a website that we put together, it's called My God, M-Y-G-O-D, I'm Hit. And that's M-Y-G-O-D, I am Hit, HIT.com. My God, I am Hit.com.
No apostrophe. I'll add that real quick. No apostrophe.
I am Hit. Look at the top video. I was a guest on James Janik's show, Feet to the Fire, and detail all of this with pictures and et cetera. Then there is a video right below that where Mark and I are together, and we make comments. But the one where we really detail everything out is in that top video. What's most important is that I have now presented this to numerous types of people, and no one yet has ever debunked or rebutted anything of the facts that we state there. So we go all the way from Bennett to all the way till the 100X exits Elm Street. And there really is not, you can't really rebut anything that's there. So as Mark was saying, is if you watch that video, you have two choices when you're done. You're either going to have a paradigm shift in consciousness, or you're going to go into a deep state of cognitive dissonance. So we covered a lot of it there, and my God, I'm hit. And again, now that he'll also be posting my latest article that I wrote about McClellan, and it gives you a lot of background too about McClellan.
Yeah, and I want to accent what you said, Brian, by pointing out to the listeners live and on the archive, and the link we refer to will be posted today. And so anyone listening on the archive, it will already be there, and live, it will be posted very, very soon, as soon as this hour concludes. But our book, there's originally a companion book, and what became the movie posted at mygodimhit.com, I-M-H-I-T, mygodimhit.com, no apostrophe. That documentary there, which won an award, by the way, at a film festival, not only has it not been debunked, but it won an award at a film festival. You and I both, Brian, won an award for that, especially you. That movie and the book focuses on Kennedy arriving at the airport, but mainly that left turn, that fateful left turn onto Elm Street, and from there to Trauma Room 1. Anything else is just a little icing on the cake. There's some side issues and some side stories, but the main focus is that short length of pavement that I just described from that final left turn on Elm Street, past the depository, onward onto 35, heading over to Parkland Hospital, some 3 or 4 miles away. And that's where we really focus. And that's where few others do, including Vincent Bugliosi, the noted Helter Skelter attorney, who wrote a 2,000 or 3,000 word doorstop that has how many pages, Brian, that are focused on that critical part of the Elm Street incident?
Yeah, basically what I counted is when the limousine turned left on Elm Street and then arrived to Parkland Hospital, and then the kind of like the incidents that occurred after that. It was a whole 12 pages of 2,000 pages, just that small amount. It is also, too, is he did quote the written statement by Glenn Bennett, and so did the Warren Commission. But what they did is they edited his statement, because Glenn Bennett wrote out a statement and then went to Washington, D.C. and typed out the statement, and that was in this book, that and then what Mark had discovered. And the critical last part of the sentence that he wrote, he said 4 inches down from the shoulder. And so what the Warren Commission did, and so did Bugliosi, is they said he got, you know, there was the statement made, but the critical part of where the shot he saw it hit was 4 inches down from the right shoulder. That was cut off. So they basically, again, a partial truth is no different than a lie. So they basically lied with Glenn Bennett's statement, but just only did a part of a statement and not full statement. And this is what we find all the way through, is that very little on the incident itself on Elm Street, and all these peripheral issues about Oswald and various other things, and it's all a diversion. And where our thing really stayed, I think...
We'll be back with more after these messages.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
As noted, my guest today is Brian David Anderson, and we're continuing our discussion, a very cutting-edge discussion, about the incident on Elm Street in Dallas, Texas on November 22, 1963, something very different that happened there, something far beyond the usual parameters of polite discussion and conventional theories about that. And what set it off, as noted earlier, excuse me, is the fact that one day I get up, and I go to the newspaper stand. It's just another day. And my wife had an appointment that day. I just happened to grab the New York Times. There wasn't much else to read. The local papers were all taken up. There was something on the front page I was semi-interested in. And I happened to see on the front page that McClellan had died. So I turned to the obituary. And needless to say, I right away called my longtime JFK researcher, Brian David Anderson, who's my guest on today's show here. And as I read through the obituary, the headline, Dr. Robert McClellan, 89, who tried to save Kennedy, and 2 days later, he's also one of the doctors, along with Malcolm Perry, that tried to save Oswald. So this Dr. McClellan is a very significant person in history, and I don't think we realize yet, Brian, how significant he stands to be. But what really jumped out at me, and we'll get into more detail on our insights into this whole incident in the second half of today's show, and springboard from what I'm about to say, but what really got me was near the end of this New York Times obituary, it said, McClellan came to believe that Kennedy's death had resulted from a conspiracy. So he did believe there was a conspiracy, but he did not subscribe to wild assassination theories. He told a television station in Philadelphia in 2013 that he had once heard from a group that asked him to to test the DNA of the blood on his preserved bloodied shirt to prove that it was not Kennedy who had been shot. And McClellan told the Philly station, and the New York Times retailed it, "I didn't even respond to them after that," McClellan said. So what happened is, in 2013, McClellan gave an interview to CBS Philadelphia, an article that I found, and that's when he said that he had heard from a group wanting him to test the DNA of that blood on his bloodied doctor's shirt, his lab shirt, and he had written it off. And in the Philly version, it said that the theory was that the person on the trauma room one gurney who was operated on and died at 1 p.m. in Parkland Hospital was a ringer, that is, a lookalike of JFK and not actually him at all. The New York Times, quoting or paraphrasing the Philly paper or the Philly report, did not use the word ringer, but the original report quoted by the Times did use the word ringer. And what's amazing here, Brian, what we both found amazing, is this made it out in the mainstream press. The fact that McClellan had had that conversation with a group, and you and I both knew that that group was you and I.
That is true.
So what made me just about jump out of my shoes was, without naming us, you and I made the New York Times.
Really? In a backhanded way.
Right. After originally making it in a backhanded way on the Philly CBS article some 5-6 years earlier. Yeah. So we are the group, ladies and gentlemen, that's referred to. We unabashedly say that and can say that without hesitation and without qualification and without equivocation, I should add. We are that group that McClellan referred to, the off-the-wall ones that are saying that the blood on his shirt should be tested for DNA. We'll get into that more in the second half. We have another segment of ads coming up, Brian. I want to get that out there that I just happened to pick up the paper that day, saw that, called you, and this jumped out at us like never before. And we'll go into that more in the second half. We got just about another minute and a half before the next break. But I think you were as shocked as I was that made it in the Times.
Yeah, and as a badge of honor, we're the nuts from off the wall.
Yes, yeah, proud to be the nuts, the off-the-wall nuts. And I'm just very glad that Dr. McClellan, despite his ambivalence at times, despite the heavy load that was on him, after all, he operated not just on what looked to be Kennedy, but he operated on quote-unquote Oswald 2 days later in the very same trauma room, in the very same hospital, after Jack Ruby apparently shot this character Oswald. That's a whole nother story. Maybe we'll touch on that just for icing on the cake in the second half here. But this is quite the revelation for Dr. McClellan, even to talk about it in a discarding way or a dismissive way. At least he still talked about it.
Yeah, and that's where, again, we'll go in here in the second half, I believe, of why he did. There's a lot more to this story other than, you know, just a couple of kooks approaching him. There's a lot more depth to this.
Yes, and we will go into that depth right after these messages. Please stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now to Angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com. Or to speak with a trained consultant, give Angioprim a call at 954-882-7221. That's 954-882-7221.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm which has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
And welcome back to Stop the Presses here on the 2nd of October 2019. My guest, Brian David Anderson, no relation, but we've worked together a long time on the JFK phenomenon. And Brian, let's get into the additional depth that you referred to right before the break. We talked about finding the obit on Dr. Robert R. McClellan, the last trauma room one doctor who operated on the body brought out of the presidential limousine, the last one to pass away. Very significant. He also operated on Oswald. We mentioned that. And this guy had an experience unlike any other. So go ahead and take it from there to explain the full import of this fine doctor and his passing and the potential legacy that he has left behind.
Well, first off, I want to say that even though he called us names and that we were, you know, nuts and off the wall, there is zero animosity towards Dr. McClellan. This is not something to try to, you know, to retort on him and, you know, that type of thing. We're not looking for anything real negative. To me, it was totally understandable he had to say and everything. So again, we're not trying to, you know, retort on him turn this in, especially with somebody who's already deceased, or try to one up him or anything else like that. We're just going to try to present the facts and then let the listener make your decision from there. And again, as I said, that I was introduced to Dr. McClellan through Dr. Baxter, and I'd always had a major question that I wanted to ask Dr. McClellan. This is covered in the article. We won't go really too much into that right now, but it's covered in the article. And that was one of the very first things that I brought up to Dr. McClellan when I sent him an email. And I told him that we had met in 1971 and I worked for Dr. Baxter. And within 1 hour of sending that email, Dr. McClellan called me, and then we started a relationship after that. We had about 2 hours of unrecorded conversations, and we had about 3 hours of recorded conversations, and then Mark made contact with him, was in his home, and, so we had a fairly extensive, probably more than the average reporter type of thing. And so one of the things also that I sent to Dr. McClellan, there was these black and white, gruesome, alleged autopsy photos of JFK. And I sent those pictures to him because, of course, now he had this perfect view of the head wound on the victim that came in. And he also made a drawing of it. That's in also in the article that I wrote. And then also, one of the most important things is that all the doctors of Parkland Hospital that day were invited to go to the JFK library and look at their autopsy photos. And as each one of those doctors came out, there was a documentary done on it. And each one came out, and McClellan included, they all came out and said they didn't recognize anything. The body that they had for pictures for the autopsy was nothing like what they saw in Parkland Hospital. And each one of them said that. And the one that was probably most emphatic was Dr. McClellan. So McClellan had then the viewpoint of live right into the wound himself. Then he saw the autopsy photos. And now he had never seen these autopsy photos that are on the internet. And so I sent them to him. And so now he is one of the very few people in the world to view these three different dead bodies. And according to Dr. McClellan, each one of those viewpoints, live and two photo sets of autopsies, are all different. And that makes you sit back and pause and say, well, you know, what's going on here? We basically then, the incident on Elm Street, the JFK incident on Elm Street, involved three dead bodies with fatal headshot wounds. And I pointed this out to him, and there was like this blank for about 6 seconds. He didn't even answer, but I could hear him deep breathing and groaning, and I have it on audio. So that was already causing him stress. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to note that when he very politely welcomed me into his home for a brief interview with my wife, Angie, I think it was in 09, he reiterated where the rear head wound was when he was in trauma room one and the body lay there that was brought out of the presidential limousine, purported to be the president. And he never wavered. He never, like Al Reich, a very detail-oriented ambulance driver, he never wavered in his story. He never contradicted himself. And Dr. McClellan was a doctor and a human being of the first order. And he had integrity like Al Reich, unsurpassed integrity. And so when you add that to a guy like that, you know, when you tell him something like that, he's got to process it. He's got to base it on what he knows and what he understands. And clearly, even though it was difficult for him to hear, he did listen to you. And it had to have occurred to him and those other fine doctors when they went to the library and they saw all these photos, and none of them thought that anything added up. They all thought that something was seriously wrong. That is huge evidence, Brian, that on top of the other evidence that we have compiled, you and I, very compelling evidence across the board, that is huge evidence that 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. It was not a situation like a lot of researchers say where they were meddling with the wounds on one body or altering the wounds on one body. That would have been virtually impossible in most cases, if not all cases. They didn't alter the wounds on one body. What you saw was 1 + 1 + 1. And that's where the cognitive dissonance comes in. And Dr. McClellan did that moaning and that hesitation. He was experiencing that dissonance. Something, a very big fact was occurring to him, or a potential fact, something very profound, a very earth-shaking, earth-shattering juncture. And it was difficult, like it is for all of us, for him to let that into his mind, because once you let it in, you have to own it. You have to make it part of your new knowledge. So that's where he was. He was at that precipice. But we see why. You're giving him the plain logic, like Sherlock Holmes. that these were not altered wounds on one body. These logically had to have been the separate wounds on separate bodies.
And so basically also he was dealing with one other issue. I think we mentioned it earlier that I quoted him, the Roy Kellerman, who sat in, he was a Secret Service agent that sat in the front seat of the 100X limousine on Elm Street. And after the first shot was fired, he told the Warren Commission and his Secret Service report that he heard the president shout, "My God, I'm hit." And that's where we get the title of our books, is from what Kellerman heard. So I quoted this to Dr. McClellan. Now, remember, Dr. McClellan was holding the forceps on the bullet wound that was now becoming the tracheotomy. And I then read to him the quotation by Kellerman that he made in his Secret Service report and also to the Warren Commission. And that was the most emotive type of moment that I ever had with Dr. McClellan. And watching all the other interviews that he has done, he literally shouted into the to the telephone, "Impossible!" I mean, it was almost to the top of his lungs that he could do it. And then he quickly then went back into a more professional mode. And again, I quote that in the article that I wrote. So there is also a discrepancy there. Here's a medical doctor saying there's no way that anybody could have spoken, even whispered, nevertheless shouted, "My God, I'm hit," with the neck wound that he was dealing with in trauma room one. So now that we bring, he already now has this information now on top of all three of these autopsy situation. And so now the pressure is building. Regretfully, we are putting pressure on him. We are giving him facts. And so also at the same time, I think we were doing other things, sending him, as we were getting information, would send him little emails and a little bit more tidbits here and there. And then we found out again about his bloody shirt. And so that's when I started calling around to various DNA labs, and I told them the situation. I said, "This blood has been, you know, oozed into a shirt in 1963. The shirt has been in really good shape. It's been kept." And I said, "You know, would the DNA still be good?" And they said, "Well, they didn't see any problems." In fact, back in 2008, 2009, the DNA people said that that blood would still be good for another 50 years.
Wow.
So, okay. But the major thing is what we could determine now, and then back in 2009, is that there are now blood tests that can determine the eye color and the hair color. And President Kennedy had hazel eyes and chestnut hair. So that would then be a distinct type of thing that would show up on a DNA test. If the test came back with brown hair or black hair or
brown eyes,
then basically that eliminates him. Now, it's again like in a crime scene when they do DNA, is basically you eliminate your suspects. So if it doesn't match up, then whoever else doesn't match up. So it's the same thing here. We can exclude then JFK as being the donor of that blood. And so what we decided then to do was to write him a letter. We had the home address, of course. And then according to the little clip that I had on the his obit, that he never got back in contact with us. Well, again, I really sincerely believe that Dr. McClellan probably forgot, but he did get back in contact with us. He sent me an email, and he declined the blood test, but he said his son had also read the letter, and in that letter, I had asked him to please take the shirt out of the house and put it in a secure place so somebody wouldn't come in and rob, and you know, they could make it look like a robbery, and basically they're after the shirt, and you know, he would have some sort of harm also. So basically, is getting that shirt and basically being very careful with it also when he's in public, you know, to guard it much more than he was before. He just had it in a plastic bag and walked in, and that was it. So basically he agreed, his son agreed, and so now they took steps to take more security. So basically we did, I believe, by our letter, even though we got a rejection for the DNA test, we did accomplish then that the shirt would have be a much more secure position. And but again, now we have accumulation. We have the Kellerman quote. We have the autopsy photos and what he had also seen. Now we hit him with this DNA. And had he had the test done and it came back negative, that would have put Robert McClellan in top headlines all over the world.
Oh, absolutely. And you add to everything you just listed, the Glenn Bennett Secret Service agent's observation of Kennedy getting hit in the shoulder, matching what you saw in the photos you ordered from College Park, and then June DeShong's diary, which we won't get into today, but she was a very sincere observant who was along Elm Street that day and wrote things down that physically contradict the standard story of the pattern of the magic bullet and the way the Warren Commission and the powers that be describe the incident that day. June DeShong's diary in the My God, I'm Hit documentary and in the companion book is another pillar of evidence among many that you and I have put together, Brian. And that's what's interesting about this is we have all these vantage points, all these locations, and everything lines up, everything corroborates. There's an alignment here.
Yeah, that's where I get the Glenn Bennett was at the 6 o'clock position of JFK. June DeShong was at his 3 o'clock position. And Roy Kellerman was at his 12 o'clock position. I can't think of anything more that corroborates one another. And then you mix in the JFK jacket, Exhibit 393, and you have some very strong indications of what occurred when the first shot fired on Elm Street.
And Mary Moorman, who maybe isn't quite as compelling, but still an important one in terms of witnesses, would have been approximately at his 9 o'clock position.
Exactly.
And we also, ladies and gentlemen, we interviewed Mary Moorman in person right around 2011, 2012, north of Dallas, and she, I'm going to say this, she agreed with our thesis.
And what she also was very interesting, she said, you really can't go public with this. You could lose your lives over this. And I thanked her for the concern, but all of the people that were involved with the incident are now gone. So nobody's going to go to jail. The only thing that's going to be done is the truth revealed, but there's not going to be any type of repercussions for anyone once this comes out, which I think one day it is going to come out.
Yeah, I believe so, too. It might be further in the future than we're comfortable with, but nevertheless, I think the truth will prevail. We have to plant that seed now while we're still this side of beyond. And what's critical here, ladies and gentlemen, listening live and on the archive, and again, these links we refer to will be posted very soon. If you're listening on the archive, they're already posted. What's critical here is to think about this in a Sherlock Holmes manner. You have to get past the emotion, don't you, Brian? You have to get around this. They killed our king. Oh, our king has been slain. Boo-hoo-hoo. The powers that be want you to be in a constant and permanent state of mourning and grief. That's not normal to be in a permanent state of grief. You have to get analytical. You have to be able to think about things, not just outside the box, but in a highly seemingly unorthodox fashion. And you have to get around these mental blocks and that false dichotomy of the Texas School Book Depository versus the Grassy Knoll. Which rifle fire was it that hit Kennedy in the head? Which assassin assassinated him? See, they want to drum home not so much where he was assassinated from, ladies and gentlemen. What they want to drum home is that he was assassinated. That's the part they want you to believe. They don't care if you believe in one sort of version of the assassination or another. What matters is you believe he was assassinated by rifle fire on that day. That's all that matters. And this pile of books from here to eternity that have been written by Vincent Bugliosi and many others is just that. just to keep you. Robert Groden's another. I don't buy him. I don't buy his stuff. That's to keep you focused on that this was simply an assassination. And we'll be right back with one more segment after these messages.
A simple smile, such platonic eye. How they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them all when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Yeah, welcome back to Stop the Presses for the final segment today, coming to you live as of the 2nd of October 2019. Your host, Mark Anderson. I've been talking to Brian David Anderson, no relation, as noted, but we've been talking about the passing of the late great doctor, Dr. Robert McClellan, and his significance in the overall Elm Street incident, November 22nd, 1963, and he also operated on Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin, quote unquote. Brian, I just want to note that you did a bang up job on the documentary My God, I'm Hit, and that's at mygodimhit.com, ladies and gentlemen, without the apostrophe, mygodimhit.com. And that's also, along with the RBN website, republicbroadcasting.org, that's also where you can read a summary of Brian's experiences as a photographer with the Dallas Times Herald and his odyssey growing up in Dallas, Texas, that led to all this that we're announcing today, a very revealing and really unprecedented topic for most radio shows, even in the alternative media. And I wanted to stress that, Brian, that you grew up right in the culture of Dallas and worked alongside Bob Jackson, who's famous for taking that photo of Ruby apparently plugging Oswald. You worked with the best of them, and so we come at this not as outsiders. I've adopted Texas as my second state. I grew up in Michigan, but you are definitely not an outsider. You grew up in Dallas, and I just wanted to stress that.
Yes, and also, too, on November 22nd, 1963, I was 11 years old. I was in the fifth grade, and like everyone else, how they've kept this all going and assassination is by doing that, they keep everybody into a post-traumatic stress disorder constantly. And our thing is trying to do is rise above that stress disorder and let's get down to the facts and what really happened.
Correct. And we're not saying, ladies and gentlemen, again, that we have every nook and cranny covered, but we believe we have the 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock vantage points covered. The key details when Kennedy's limo took that fateful turn leaving Love Field, got to Elm Street, took that sharp turn left on Elm Street, and went through this debacle and then onward to Parkland Hospital where Dr. Robert McClellan came into the story, along with Al Reich, the ambulance driver, who's another story in and of himself. Two heroes, really, in their own ways from that fateful day. And with that, again, go to mygodimhit.com and check out the entire award-winning documentary that Brian mainly made with my input and research. And any final comments, Brian?
Yeah, the main thing would be is there is right at the top, there is a link to the Feet to the Fire program.
Yes.
And that is probably one of the best summaries that I've ever done. Then there is right below that, there is another program with James Janik, and Mark and I are together. So if you watch both of those, I feel that you're going to be fairly much informed about what we're doing. And the information, especially what's in the first 30 minutes, will never be rebutted.
It certainly appears that way, no doubt. Well, Brian David Anderson, thanks for being on the show again today. First time that I can recall since the initial inauguration on 2008 when you were on this show. Yep. So have a great day out there out west in California.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody next time here on Republic Broadcasting. Thanks for listening live in the archive. Again, look for those posts on Republic Broadcasting's own website and mygodimhit.com and thetruthhound.com. Everybody have a great day.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.